thank you to the Arkells, and welcome to the Kaufman Show special edition with a voice that is not Dave Kaufman's. That is my own, Julie V.
How refreshing.
And that was Jay Farrar. And we also have a special guest with us, Anakin Slade.
Hello. Yeah, press the button there, bro. You there?
I'm such an amateur. Hello.
There you go.
There we go. Dave is in New York right now. He's attending a concert, I believe.
Enjoying a little bit of Springsteen right now.
Enjoying some Springsteen
today. At this very moment, actually.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And Dave asked me to guest host the show, which I was happy to do. And I'm excited to be here with you guys. Anakin, is this your first time in studio?
No, this is my numerous times.
This is the third time you've been on the Kaufman Show, though.
This is the first time, like, starting off a show.
Aha, that's what I
mean. And staying for the duration.
The duration?
The
Don't
whole
use
duration.
Such lofty words, Jay. I'm here to back up my big brother and just talk smack, because that's what I like doing.
Okay, and I heard last week Dave and Jay talking about both of us, Anakin, how we are two very opinionated people, and Jay is going to, like, hold down the fort and keep things
a little
tempéré.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to keep you guys in check, which is very unusual because it's usually Kaufman that keeps me in check. So I got to control you two because I know how to, you know, I know how you guys get. So
I'm afraid.
Just relax a little bit, okay?
I'm afraid of both of you right now. So I'll try not to say anything.
What do you mean when you say you know how we are? What are you afraid of?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm sure everybody has read your tweets, and you guys are very opinion, which is a good thing. It's fine. It's very, very good. But if you can, if you take a look at Anakin Slade or at Metric Julie, which is their Twitter handles, please follow them. You know that they're not afraid to speak. So we're ready for that. I'm ready.
I suppose you could say that.
Yeah. We have, a lot of numerous subjects that you guys are going to be talking about with me, of course. And I'll, like I said, I'm just here to be diplomatic.
I'm excited. What are we going to talk about?
Plenty of things coming up.
How about we just say a few quick words on the final game of the Habs season that was on Saturday? I was in attendance at the Bell Center. Were you guys there? Did you see the game?
I was there.
You were there.
Yes, Jay?
I was working, so I got to watch a little bit of it, but it was very busy at the pub.
That was my first game at the Bell Center this year, actually.
Really?
I didn't get to see one game just because of life. And
it'll do that to you.
And not that I was expecting anything different, but it was so I thought it was so dead silent at the Bell Center. Not that I was expecting, you know, a huge I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting, you know, since it was Toronto, I was expecting, you know, a little bit of belligerent rivalry. But no, nothing at all like that. It was dead silent. It was very morose. What did you think?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to heckle the opposite team in that situation since you're both at the bottom of the conference. So I think everybody was keeping quiet out of a sense of silent shame or something but you know what? I've been to a lot of games this year, actually. I went to about 13 at the Bell Center.
Oh, you poor thing.
How was it this year? I mean, because the season was
kind of. There's no kind of here.
Okay, it was kind of the worst season. How was it at the Bell Center? How were the fans reacting?
You know, there was it was pretty dead all year. I'm trying to think of a good moment that I was there for. It was pretty dead. I mean, I left a couple of games, and I've never left a hockey game in my life.
Wow!
So
I believe you showed up at the pub during the first intermission on Saturday.
I did, but that was because I was with Cromartie, and Cromartie can't handle hockey at all. He doesn't understand it.
All right, cool.
No, listen, he was like, it was the end of the. We were there because the Canadians invited us for the whole Montreal baseball project. And at the end of the first, we talked to some people there, and then we felt that we had politely stayed, or Cromartie more specifically, felt he had stayed long enough to endure this Canadian game of hockey, and said, you want to go? I was like, you mean leave? He's like, yeah, let's get out of here.
Wow.
I was like, sure, Warren. I'm here as your guest, so I'll do whatever you want. So
I'm going to go drink.
Yeah.
So you missed the end of the game ceremony.
No, this is actually the game where Pacioretty scored a pair. I forget who even played. Tampa, when we played Tampa on Wednesday, I believe it was.
No, it didn't. Oh, yeah, it's true. You stayed for the duration on Saturday, right?
Saturday I was there for the whole It was the Tampa game.
Wow.
Because I was seeing I saw people tweet about this on Saturday. Man, what a great classy way to close the season, blah blah blah, because all throughout the evening on the Jumbotron you could see certain seats, certain people winning jerseys, game-worn jerseys. And they did this whole ceremony at the end where the players gave the people, the winners, their jerseys, which is really cool for the people who won the jerseys. But for like 21,000 other people, it was the most boring, weird way to end the season. It's just like, you know, they kind of saluted us and then it was like the jersey giveaway. And there was, everyone was standing and everyone was like expecting something. Because after this season, I got the feeling everyone was expecting a bigger show from the players and the organization. And all it really was just giving the people the jerseys. And I was like, what is this? I was really expecting more.
It was weird. They were all standing around like the end of a Wheel of Fortune episode, you know? Yeah. Just standing around talking to the host. You know, it was like, you know, Carey Price dressed in his best Will Rogers outfit. And
there was a sense of, I noted that at the end when they kind of went all to the center ice and stuck the sticks in the air. There's kind of like a, we're sorry about this, sorry, guys. you know, hesitantly sticking the sticks in the air. Please don't be mad. It was kind of that. Please don't be mad at us.
You got the sense of that at the beginning. There was like a whole thank you video. And basically it was the player saying, well, you know, thanks for coming to our, you know, awful games, and we really appreciate it. We know it was a really difficult season, and it was just so depressing and morose. It just set the tone for the whole evening. I thought the whole thing was really dead silent, and it's a shame because it's like it's the last game. We don't get hockey until October again. Yeah. I was expecting more.
Am I
exaggerating?
No, you're dead on. You're dead on. It was, you know, and. It was the same feeling at McLean's as well. People were sitting around just watching a game. And, I mean, we didn't get a big turnout until after the game where everybody says, wow, after seeing Carey Price's outfit, we need a drink. So,
excuse me. His outfit was magnificent.
Pimping. It was pimping.
It was outstanding.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
He can rock it. He gets away with it.
Yeah, of course he does. No, yeah. I love it. One guy was like, oh, my God, what a terrible – no, that's awesome. Like one of my bus boys.
Well, you know what? One of the best things to come out of this year, I think the most enjoyable moment and sense of pride for Habs fans was probably the All-Star game when we saw Carey Price and his personality and how, you know, he was so quick with a good joke. And he was the guy who kind of stood out in the All-Star game. And you know, with hockey players, we know there's not that many lively personalities. So it was kind of like a coming out party for Carey, showing his personality and kind of running with it and not being ashamed.
Yeah. That was one of the few proud moments for Hab fan this year, because everyone on Twitter was talking about Carey. Oh man, he's such a great goalie, and now he's also a really funny, great guy.
Yeah,
we didn't have a lot of those moments as Habs fans this year.
It's Lars Eller's 4-goal game, and
that's exactly.
And maybe the Eric Cole's natural hat trick, but that's about it.
Well, there was, you know, Thomas Plekanec scored on a 3-on-5 on Saturday night,
which I did not know, but it went back to
1993.
And it was Carboneau, right?
It was
Carboneau. Who scored the last 5-on-3 shorthanded goal.
Yeah, it would be.
I'm surprised, though. I didn't even think about it at the time. I was like, oh, we scored on a 5-on-3, but I didn't think to myself, when was the last time this happened? It just seemed like something that happens once in a while, but apparently it takes 30 years, at least for the Habs.
So at least there was that, but I was all around. I was pretty disappointed in our last game.
All right, well, that's the way it is, right? I mean, the whole season's been that way. So, we're queuing up the Anakin Slade here. I guess we're going to a break. Thank you, Jimmy.
So.
Jimmy G in studio as always, helping us out here because we're going to need some help tonight. Were made of these embarrassing, shameless, and masquerading Malaysians. You bet I'm blasting the standards of fourth class for maintaining. I'm exacting this patience to last the blackest of faces. It's like a culture is one big rap circus act amazing. Attacking through statements, trying to. You're listening to the Kaufman Show on TSN 990. Johnny wishes he was famous. Spends his time alone in the basement with a Lennon and Cobain and a guitar and a stereo. While he wishes
wishes he could escape this, but it all seems so contagious. Not to be yourself and faceless in a song that has no soul. I remember feeling low, and I remember losing hope, and I remember all the feelings and the day they stopped. We are all innocent. We are all innocent.
Welcome back to The Kaufman Show with your hosts, Jay Farrar, Anakin Slade, and myself, Julie V, and there's Jimmy on the boards. We're joined right now by a person by the name of Greg Brownstein. He has a gay hockey blog called Puck Buddies. That's PUCKBUDDYS. And I wanted to, you know, especially on the heels of the whole You Can Play project with Patrick Burke, well, the Burks, I wanted to introduce the Puck Buddies website, I guess, to Montreal and everyone who's listening. Greg, are you there?
You betcha. Good evening, Julie. Greetings.
Hi.
From Washington, D.C.
It's good to talk to you, Greg. How are you?
Park. Pretty good.
So, Greg, tell us about how Puck Buddies came to be and what it's all about.
Well, it started out as kind of a lark about a year and a half ago with my partner Doug and I, and Doug would be joining us tonight, but he's asleep because he's got to get up early. It was December 2010, right before the Caps-Pens Winter Classic. And Doug and I were actually involved in another blog at the time. It was far different than hockey. It was one that was looking into the unsolved murder, a 2006 unsolved murder in D.C. that myself, Doug, and two friends were working on. So we were at a Caps game December 4th, 2006. And I turn to Doug and I tap him on the shoulder during one of the intermissions. And I kind of cheekily said, "Hey, you're my puck buddy." And he didn't quite get it. And I said, "No, dude, puck buddy." And then we kind of giggled and we both sat there silently thinking to ourselves, A, is that URL taken? And B, could we handle another blog? And could we pull off a gay hockey blog? So we kicked it around for a couple few weeks, and then right before the Winter Classic, we decided to go for it. We put the website up, and it took off from there. And we were sort of like the cheeky gay bastards of the NHL, and the posts were kind of primitive at first. It was shirtless hockey players and fun and games and shenanigans and that sort of thing. And then the writing started to evolve, and we got the attention of the Caps community, the Caps fan base, the Caps media corps, and even up to and including Caps owner Ted Leonsis, who became a reader. That's our short story.
Seeing it on your website, in fact, yeah, Ted Leonsis says, quickly becoming a must-read. The New York Times says Puck Buddies has become an important trailblazer in the game cybersphere, and Puck Daddy said that you were the 2011 Blog of the Year.
Yeah, so yeah, it was nice to hear that. It's nice to get that kind of reaction from folks.
And how has go ahead.
We really didn't expect it. It just, you know, we didn't really have any goals or weren't really certain as to how it was going to evolve. But we just kind of followed our instincts and just stuck to what we knew. We knew we couldn't compete head-to-head with the serious puck guys out there. We don't necessarily come from a deep hockey background. Doug from Detroit, more of a longtime hockey fan than myself, and I'm very much one of those Caps bandwagoners that started getting into the game a couple of years ago. But
as opposed to any other Caps fans?
Oh, you're good.
So, Craig, how's the reaction been? Both in the gay community and outside the gay community, has there been any resistance? How have people been reacting to the fact that it's, you know, so openly gay? I mean, the tagline on the Puck Buddies website at puckbuddies.com is "for boys who like hockey."
You know, there's no resistance at all. I can't think of, you know, in the year and a half that we've been up and running, we haven't had more than a handful of like flames in the comments or anything like that. I think the vast majority of our readership is the straight hockey fan. We do have a number of, you know, gay readers, obviously, and we also we expanded earlier this season. Last season, we were pretty much cap-centric, and this year we decided to open it up and recruit 12 to almost 15 other writers around the league in NHL markets to write about their home teams. And I think one of them is tuned in right now, one of our favorites, Andrew, in Toronto. And we've got the Habs covered with Matt. And the Islanders covered with Vinny, and Jeff does the Wings, and Brian does the Devils, and Adam does the Pens. I mean, it's a good bunch.
And so are all of these people either, is it a prerequisite to have gay writers on your website or otherwise be LGBT rights activists?
Well, we have one dirty secret that we're probably going to let out, and we're going to let the cat out of the bag in a week or two. One of our regular contributors out there is actually a straight man.
We're
going to out him as a heterosexual later on this year.
Well, you know, he's an ally, and allies are important in allies are important for the defense of LGBT rights. Now, how has what do you think about the You Can Play project? Has it been, you know, is the message something that, you know, within the gay community is being treated the way that you hoped it would be?
Yeah, and let me give you a little bit of background on that. We got involved. We have a feet in both camps. We do the Puck Buddy site, and that's how we got to know Patrick Burke about a year or so ago. He just reached out to us, heard about us somehow, and said, attaboys, like what you guys are doing. Keep up the good work. And then as the months progressed, and we just had like a little bit of a phone or an email relationship with him, he let us in confidentially on the You Can Play plans. And my day job is a PR guy in Washington, so I was able to get the You Can Play project and Patrick as a pro bono client. So I was able to do the media launch and the media outreach for You Can Play just nearly 5 weeks ago. And so I've got a kind of a front row seat to that whole process, and it's been absolutely fascinating. The players have been amazing. The hockey community has been just terrific in how well they've accepted it and eaten it up. I think as we were talking today with I was talking today with one of the other co-founders, Brian, out in Colorado. And what's odd is, or we're still trying to wrap our arms around, the reaction in the straight media, in the mainstream media, has been overwhelming. The reaction and reception in the gay media has been, for the most part, muted, surprisingly.
Really?
You Can Play has been featured in the New York Times, Washington Post, Associated Press, Canadian Press, Reuters, Sports Illustrated, Sporting News, Hockey News, dozens of hockey blogs. I could probably count on one hand the number of gay outlets that have given it serious treatment. So it's I don't know how to explain it, and we'll figure that out and try and just double up our outreach, you know, to the gay media.
Do you think it might be because sports can be pretty unfriendly to anyone who identifies as LGBT, and so they kind of just shy away from sports, and that's why they're not covering it?
It's hard to say. And, you know, part of, you know, I was doing the media outreach on it, and I was really focusing on the mainstream. And, you know, when it came right down to it, I would much rather wanted a hit in the New York Times than the Advocate. Still, you know, there have been some outlets that have stepped up. Extra up in Canada has done a pretty good job. Andy Toll Road has done an okay job. We got a nice mention out of Andrew Sullivan. Advocate had a couple little pieces. But, you know, considering the sort of the tsunami of media coverage that was in the straight and mainstream sports and hockey communities, I just see a big disparity in the coverage, and I really don't know what to attribute it to.
Okay. On the heels of the You Can Play project and all of the accolades that you've been getting, what do you want to do next with Puck Buddies and how, you know, LGBT and all of these subjects are being introduced into mainstream media and the NHL?
Well, at least, you know, as far as the Puck Buddy editor speaking, putting on that chapeau for a moment and adjusting it to a very jaunty tilt, as you can see. We want to get through the playoffs. Our caps, our blessed caps are in there. We got in by the skin of our teeth. So we want to escort them and nurse them along as best as we can. Doug and I also write for another mainstream cap site in town called Russian Machine Never Breaks. And they're just great guys. So we're going to be doing a lot of our caps coverage on that. For Puck Buddies, we got a number of our writers who have, you know, active playoff teams. And we want to figure out, you know, how we can stay interesting and topical over the next couple of months as the playoffs, you know, continue. We want to put the play back in playoffs. So there'll be a couple of Puck Buddies tricks up our sleeves as the series and the rounds move along. And next year we'll hope to be bigger and better.
One last question for you, Craig, before we let you go. How close do you think we are from when an NHL player coming out and saying that he's gay, and how important do you think that is?
You know, Patrick says it. I think he guesstimates it, you know, a year or 2 years away.
Okay.
And it's interesting why they think, you know, a lot of folks think it might be an NHL player who comes out first of any of the top major pro league sports. And it has a lot to do, seems to be attributed to cultural backgrounds and progressive communities that a lot of the players come from. Progressive, you know, communities in Canada, progressive communities in Europe, Sweden, Norway, Finland. And it seems, you know, that the NHL is ripe, far more ripe than Major League Baseball or the NFL or National Basketball Association. So more cultural than anything else. Leads a lot of people to think it'll be an NHL player who comes out, and Patrick thinks it could be a year or two away. It'd be pretty amazing, and then hopefully we can move on with our lives, and it'd be just no big deal. It's just like we're going to root for the player, and I'll be perfectly honest with you. If there was a gay player on the Boston Bruins right now, I'd hate his guts.
That's wonderful, and that is kind of in a way what we are hoping to achieve. Craig, thanks for coming on. And how can we read you? Where can we read you?
That's at puckbuddies.com, and that's puck, BUDDYS.com. And you can follow us on Twitter, too, at puckbuddies.
Thanks so much. And you guys are a delight to follow. You're fun and lovely, and I think it's great what you're doing with the LGBT stuff on the blog. It's great stuff.
Thank you. And Julie, you are an excellent judge of character. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig.
Do me a favor. Play me out with some Grateful Dead.
Oh, my goodness. Ooh. Well, we'll look for it right now. We got Jimmy G just looking for some Grateful Dead. Nice.
We'll do our best, Craig. Thanks so much for coming on.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Good night, Montreal.
Bye-bye. All right, that was that was Craig throwing a curveball there. That's fine. That's all right.
You got trucking.
Yeah, there you go. Anakin Slate is just going to sing.
That's
some
the only
Dead.
Word in the song that I know. Trucking.
That's the only one.
Is that all you got, Jay?
Yeah. No.
You know what? I don't even know any Grateful Dead songs. I think I'm just way.
Nobody
way
does,
too young.
Julie. Nobody does. The only people that know Grateful Dead songs are Grateful Dead. People.
All right.
There we go.
There we go.
We're going to take a break right now on The Kaufman Show on TSN 990. We'll be back with a little bit more talk. We will take some phone calls. Thanks for the Grateful Dead, Jimmy.
is some smooth listening there on the Kaufman Show right
That's
now.
Some late night music, a little Pink Floyd for your listening pleasure.
Yeah, that was very enjoyable.
It's going to come up a little bit, though. Oh, there's the crazy guy talking in the back. As you will always have on every single Pink Floyd album, there's always a crazy guy talking on the back. All right, that's good enough, Jimmy. Forget it. All right. You're going to put everybody to sleep.
Talking about crazy guys, I'm just kidding. Let's talk about the Augusta National. Jay, what do you think about the fact that they don't allow women?
What do I think about it?
Yeah, because we're not going to talk about the golf because we don't, I frankly don't care that much.
I mean, we know, yeah, I mean, nobody really does. I mean, I'm sure everybody talked about Bubba Watson today and his beautiful, smooth win at the Masters, but golf has a different perspective for me. Jimmy, do you have a little something that you can play for me that may reflect my views on the sport? No, you don't? Okay. Well, you want to cue it up? Okay. Well, we'll get it to you in a second. Listen, it's a private club. They don't allow women. It's a club that's been around, I believe, since 1934. Ancient views. But is that shocking to you in a sport like golf? It is an elitist game. It is a game played primarily by rich white men. And they don't allow women. Now, my point of view on this is, okay, if they don't want to allow women on it, they say it's a men's club. I suppose they have every right to do that. My question is, what decent woman would want to be a part of this club anyway?
That's another thing. And last week, the golf correspondent for the New York Times, Karen Krause, told golf.com that she'd love to stop covering the Masters altogether until it fixes its sexist membership policy. And that got her into trouble. And the New York Times sports editor, Joe Sexton, told the Associated Press that her comments were completely inappropriate. And she has been spoken to, and saying that people essentially are saying that this is a debate that isn't important enough to be having. And what I think is that this is not a debate. It's not up for debate whether or not it's sexist or if, you know, it's not up for debate. It is. And if they want to function like a private, you know, a select and private membership, which they're allowed to do, like Jay said, they can't say in all, you know, in all honesty, in all fairness, we're not having this debate. It's not really up for debate. That is what they're doing. That is what you're doing.
Right. I mean, we had this incident that was actually well documented in the news that I was a direct part of, which was at the St. Sulpice bar where they did not allow people because of, you know, the way they were dressed and so forth. They happened to be black people, and that's where the issue got a little shady for whether it is within somebody's rights to not allow somebody into their facility. Because, you know, I mean, as a free country, and both America and Canada most of the time are, you are allowed to admit or not admit whoever you please. The question is, when does it become a violation of human rights? And with the Masters, I mean, you could probably argue that it is a violation of human rights. And if I was a woman's group and I was ahead of that, I would try to hit it on that nail, because people are talking about boycotts. But does a boycott encourage these people, turn it into more of a boys club by not having women in the stands, you know, not having women cover it? So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interesting ways to deal with this. And clearly that didn't go over well with her bosses over it makes you wonder if the journalists are a boys club as well.
Well, I mean, women are allowed to play at this place, which I mean, that's meaningless anyway. But my main concern is here. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. But my main concern is here. I mean, of course, most of us are for the equality of women. Women should be paid just as much as men in the workplace, obviously, which is not happening. They're still well behind, believe it or not, in this day and age. But again, it's an old mentality. And, you know, to put it mildly, without getting too into it and too intricate, let's put it in layman's terms here. Here's an idol of mine.
I've got just the place for low-cost housing. I have solved this problem. I know where we can build housing for the homeless. Golf courses.
Perfect. Golf courses. Just what we need. Just what we need. Plenty of good land in nice neighborhoods. Land that is currently being wasted on a meaningless, mindless activity engaged in primarily by white, well-to-do male businessmen who use the game to get together to make deals to carve this country up a little finer among themselves. I am getting tired, really getting tired of these golfing suckers in their green pants and their yellow pants and their orange pants and their precious little hats and their cute little golf carts. It is time to reclaim the golf courses from the wealthy and turn them over to the homeless. Golf is an arrogant, elitist game, and it takes up entirely too much room in this country. Too much room in this country.
George Carlin's views have always been simple and to the point, and thank God we had an editing machine. So, in retrospect, like I said, what woman, what decent-minded woman would want to be a part of this anyway? The worst part, and, you know, there's been a derivative of the feminist movement where it should be about equality and having the same rights as men, not wanting to be like men, because who would want to be like a man, like a business rich white man?
Well, you know, it is a fine line, though, to walk, actually. And I guess I personally wouldn't want to be involved in this because, you know, I don't want to have to corner this organization to be like, you have to admit women now because you guys are being jerks. But what's somewhat more bothersome is that a lot of beat reporters might have the leeway and the ability to write about this, to write about how they're ignoring women and how women are being shunned, and they're not doing it that much. That's also part of the problem. If the media are not reporting this and talking about it, well, the public opinion isn't going to change. They shift the public opinion, and not a lot of people are talking about this, and when they do, they're getting into trouble. And so nothing's ever going to happen, you know, if we keep this mentality, you know, or it's like, well, people don't care about seeing women in this competition, but what they don't say is because we made it that way and because this is all that's getting out there. And so, you know, there's the line is difficult to cross where, you know, we want to be equal. We want to be treated equally and fairly. That's all. And well, what are we supposed to do? Like, it's a complicated situation, I think.
It is, and you're always walking on eggshells in situations like this. By the way, if anybody wants to chime in, we will take callers. We want to hear you. It's 514-790-0990. If you're out of town, it is 1-866-896-2546. We want to hear what you have to say because we discussed the issues here, and Julie Vayer is bringing it. Anakin Slade, not so much. He's not angry enough yet. We got to get him angry.
Give me time, bro.
I'll give you time. As much time as you want. We've got Brian Wilde coming up next. Right, Julie?
We do. We have Brian Wilde of CTV. He's going to talk a little bit of Habs, a little bit of Montreal sports centricity.
All right. You're listening to The Kaufman Show. I'm Jay Farrar, joined by Julie Vayer and Anakin Slade. We'll be back after this.
Rise up, shepherd, rise up. Here for lock is wrong, far from the hill. Stars have faded, the sky is still. Angels are shouting.
I'm a soldier!
We've been traveling all the lucky ground. We've been traveling over rocky ground, rocky ground. We've been traveling over rocky ground, rocky ground. We've been traveling over rocky ground.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. We're really listening to some smooth music tonight. I'm really digging this.
Yeah.
I'm really digging the vibe. I mean,
late night vibe. Anakin Slade put our little music together here today.
That's the boss right there.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a rap on this song.
There is?
Yeah.
By who?
I don't know who it is, but the
good talk, Anakin.
Well, they have the gospel singers going on in this song, and then suddenly she just busts out into this rap, which on paper sounds like a disaster. On Bruce Springsteen's new album, there's a gospel track, a gospel singer who suddenly bursts out into a rap. But you know what? It works, and it's one of the best songs on the album.
Are you liking this new album?
I do. I like it. There's three or four songs that are kind of a good mix of classic Springsteen and kind of a new wave of rock type thing. And it's really strong.
I'm sure Mr. Kaufman will be happy to hear that.
Yeah, he's loving it.
Higher ground.
All right, we're going to speak with a friend of the Kaufman Show right now, Brian Wild of CTV.
Hey, Metric. You knew I was going to do that.
Yeah, I did. But you do know that my real name is Julie, right?
What?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, Anakin, come on, man. Share stuff like that with me.
You know, people also sometimes call me the French Julie. It's really up to you.
I'd probably avoid that. I like Metric.
Okay.
I like the sound of it.
I mean, I'll call you Gary. Is that okay?
Gary?
Yeah, that's my dad's name.
Gary Bryan.
I mean, I like Gary. Is that okay?
Where did Metric come from? How'd you come up with that?
It's the lamest story in the world.
It's really clever. I don't know why I like it so much, but I just find it clever.
I really don't want to tell you if you think it's so clever. Then.
Oh, no, because it's still there. Whether the genesis is lame or not, it's still there. It's still a part of it.
Well, when I signed up for Twitter 3 years ago, if I knew that I'd be on Twitter so long talking to so many people, I would have thought of something more clever. But it was just because I was listening to the band Metric, and I love the band Metric, and they're my favorite. And I just wrote Metric Julie, which in retrospect sounds really dumb, but that's what I did. And, you know, it's funny, people think it's because of the metric system.
Well, that's how I thought to me.
But then why wouldn't I call myself Imperial Julie?
There
Doesn't that sound a million times cooler?
No, because Metric Julie would be sort of like we switch from Imperial to Metric over the course of our lives. I'd be Imperial Brian because I'm like old balls. You'd be like Metric Julie because you're new.
Reclaiming.
I can't use balls there. You're new. What time are we? We passed midnight?
Oh, yeah.
Are we past midnight?
Brian, go crazy. Go crazy.
So we're reclaiming
your new vagina. I'm old bald.
Wow.
See, so I'm Imperial Brian, and you're Metric Julie. It makes perfect sense if you think about it.
Yeah, well, it was great talking to you, Brian.
And my other line's ringing.
Yeah, and all of a sudden.
Oh. Anybody... My CTV boss would like to talk to me for a second. Yeah.
And Jimmy made me bring clean versions of my album on the song of my album.
Yeah,
okay.
That's out the window. If anybody's wondering, we're talking to Brian Wild from CTV Sports.
Yeah.
Let's
enjoying being on it.
Yeah,
as well.
The conversation has taken an unfortunate turn, but maybe we could switch to a little bit of hockey, Brian. Sorry. Listen, hey, you want to get dirty? We'll get dirty, pal. Let's do it. You know, we're here all night. We don't.
No, hold on. You know, Jay, you weren't supposed to be the one to say that.
Yeah.
There were like three options there, that was not the one I was going for.
Yeah, listen, we don't have to talk hockey, but. I wanted to get a little bit of your view on, I guess, the postmortems were today.
We can talk hockey.
Okay, jeez. Twist my rubber arm.
Yeah.
I was wondering, postmortems today, did any of the players stick out on their comments today to you? Anybody come up with something original?
My favorite moment was when I asked Andrei Markov what he planned to do for his summer. And I don't know if it was a language thing or anything, but that's a pretty innocuous question because it usually gets a response like, oh, yeah, I got my cottage in Ontario, or you know, I was going to go to Europe and spend some time in Venice, or you know, something like that. You know, just, you know,
Markov in Venice.
Something, you know, pretty relaxed, right? And he says to me, do you want an honest answer? And already I knew. Yes. So what are you, my wife?
I would tell you
for my wife. And then at that moment, it was weird because I didn't think I was asking an interesting question at all. And then I knew I was. So I just stared at him and I didn't say anything. I just kind of gave him what a good reporter does there is just shut up and see what happens next. Don't let him off the hook. Don't let yourself off the hook. Just let it be. Let it breathe. 2, 3, 4. says, oh, eventually he says, so I'll just have to work to keep strengthening my knee. And I was like, boom, I'm asking you about your summer vacation, and you come up with that you need to strengthen your knee for the summer. So I thought that ended up being a pretty interesting moment in the story that I put up. The other one everybody's talking about is that he didn't want to talk about PK.
He didn't want to talk about PK. Why is
that? Yeah, Andre didn't. I don't know. But
something,
you know,
wrong?
And a lot of people are making a pretty big deal of it. But for me, I mean, he was just kind of in a bad mood today. You know, maybe his dog is sick, or I mean, there are a lot of reasons people get in bad moods.
Right.
But
or, you know, maybe
and reporters and people looking for stuff. I mean, we put a lot into that. And for me, it's just like, okay, dog's sick. Maybe his kids got the flu. Maybe he didn't sleep well. I mean, people get in bad moods. Do we have to suggest he hates PK just because he was in a bad mood?
Yes, we do. This is Montreal.
That's what we do, yeah. He was inches away of pulling a Camilleri. It's too bad we were all disappointed.
Yeah.
Well, anyways.
So I didn't have any problem with that. But other than that, you know, it was pretty lame this year because he didn't have any management. He didn't have a coach because he spoke on Saturday. You don't have a general manager. So it was just the players. And even the players, I mean, because they didn't know who their manager was, if you asked them any tough questions about what kind of contract they might want or UFA status or anything like that, I mean, they had an easy out for all of it. Well, we don't even know who the GM is. So, you know, how are we going to answer that?
Yeah.
How can I be in contract negotiations? I don't even have a, you know, so you really couldn't go in that direction, which is one of our favorite directions to go on that day. And that was not available to us.
Even if we had the former general manager, you probably wouldn't have heard from management anyway.
That was one of the things that Kerry did say that was kind of funny. He said something to the effect of Pierre and I talked a little bit during the season, but he doesn't like to talk much during this season. He has a funny way about him. Which was kind of he's a funny guy that way, or he has an odd way about him. But it was sort of it just felt like a comment where Kerry was being a little bit flippant about the style of human being that Pierre was and is.
Okay, well.
Yeah, it was kind of a loaded comment there, calling him, you know, funny, odd.
Did you hear it?
I didn't hear it myself, yeah. But just the way that Pierre Gauthier does things. I mean, we know, you know, people are fired, you know, within a few seconds of the game. You know,
yeah. Well, I mean, the guy will always carry the cookie incident with him. You know, as long as he shall live, he will carry the cookie incident in Ottawa with him. Do you know of which one I speak?
Enlighten us.
When he was in Ottawa as a GM, they always used to offer up pretty much the same things they do at the Bell Center, hot dogs and chips, and they have popcorn there. We don't, if I remember right. It's been a while. And cookies. And he made a one cookie rule for everybody because some of the media people were eating too many cookies. So he had a one cookie rule.
Cookies are serious business.
The cookie cap.
They're big cookies, but I'm just, you know, it's just – it's a moment where you go, hey, I don't mean to tell you how to live your life, Pierre, but considering you're the GM of a hockey team, you might be micromanaging a little bit here. I was thinking there might be somebody under you that would worry about the cookie issue and cut down on the cookies, or maybe you could pass on to one of those underlings that you have a cookie problem so it doesn't get back to you that you're legislating cookie per media person. You know, it's just you can go about it a certain way that's going to help your reputation a little bit more than worrying, you know, firsthand with the media about a cookie rule. So he will always have that. And maybe that's what Kerry was speaking of.
Well, that's not awkward at all. We're talking to Brian Wild from CTV Sports. Brian, a little bit of soccer. Is that okay with you, or do you want to get down dirty again?
No, I better pass on any more of those comments.
Toronto FC in town against the Montreal Impact on Saturday. Low attendance. Do you find that the turnout was a little bit lower than you expected?
23-1, right?
Yeah.
I thought it was a little higher than I expected. Actually.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was a little higher. When this year started and people asked me for thoughts in the new year, predictions for on the team and show, one of the ones I actually said was that I had a feeling that the Impact weren't going to be as well received as a lot of people were anticipating. So 23-1 for the second game wasn't bad. That would have looked pretty awesome at Saputo Stadium. It looked cavernous at Olympic Stadium, which was one of the reasons that every sport always had trouble there, is the way that building makes things look cold and dank and empty and dark. So I think I'm okay with that number. I'm really okay with that number. I think that's pretty good, actually, considering okay. They were away on the road. They were losing all of their games. Montreal is a town that follows winners. And yeah. I think when you're on the road and you've only had the one game, which was more of an event than a game, you know, it wasn't really – I don't think that was a game full of attended fans, but attended interested people that wanted to at one point in their lives say that they were there for the first one. So it's always the second one that gives you a true marker of what you're really looking at for a base. And if their base is 23-1, that's pretty darn good. I think if they can match that number in the first five League Ones and one Champions League One at Olympic Stadium, and then move into Saputo and fill that at 20, I think they're laughing.
But how representative of the of what you're saying is the second game in Montreal, really? Because it was against Toronto, and it's my understanding
there were about 2,000. In red there, was there?
Okay. Because it's my understanding that there were a lot of people from Toronto attending this game, and that Montreal's pretty much the closest stadium for them to see Toronto FC.
That's
outside
true.
Of the city.
That's true. But I think that the number that were Toronto, and I could be corrected on this. In fact, I should probably just open Twitter right now and see how stupid I am. I believe it was about 2,000 that were from Toronto. I saw the couple of red sections when the shots were wide enough on the TSN broadcast, and it looked like about 2. So that takes it down to 21. I think the attendance is said to be much better for the Beckham appearance, so that's going to bring the number nice and high.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to. I think that my prediction in January may end up being a wrong one, because I had fears of 15, 12, somewhere in there. For the Saputo or for the Olympic Stadium games,
okay,
and that would have looked pretty cavernous.
I think they have about 4 games remaining at the Olympic Stadium.
Exactly.
Should they just scrap this toilet bowl and just play everything at Saputo Stadium?
Well,
it's a little bit more comfortable, a little more intimate environment.
Well, that's the goal. As soon as they get it ready,
okay.
You know, I mean, they got to finish the construction. They had the setback in the parking area where. Part of the building crumbled again.
I was going to say, isn't it better to have it in a stadium that's being put together instead of one that's falling apart?
Well, yeah, but they had to play some home games. I mean, can you imagine if they played like 7 road games to start? They would have been 0-10, and the interest would have been just so waning already. I mean, it's very hard for an expansion team to win games in this league. You're not really sure who's going to succeed and who's going to fail, because you have no sense of what they're going to be like in a new league and in a new environment. I mean, some guys have worked out and some have struggled. That's been pretty surprising. So,
yeah.
Like Justin Mapp, he's looked really good to me, and I didn't think he was going to be that good, and I thought Patrice Bernier was going to be the star of the team, and he's had some tough moments in the early going. So it's not always predictable who's going to do well.
You got a Stanley Cup winner for us? A little prediction?
Oh, hey, this is what I'd love to talk about.
Okay.
I have some favorites. I think the Pittsburgh-Philadelphia series winner, I mean, that's the 4-5 team in the entire league, and they're facing each other in the first round. And isn't it time they get rid of that stupid rule that allows Florida to be the 15th best team and the 3 seed in the East? That's so dumb. So I think the Pittsburgh-Philly winner goes very far. I think the Rangers are going to lose in the first round, even though first or second round.
Wow.
I think Vancouver is going to lose in the first round. I think they're ripe. Okay. I think Chicago goes far. I think everybody's picking Nashville, Detroit, Nashville now. There's just this huge Nashville bandwagon there, and I actually think Detroit's going to win that series. I don't see how. One of my favorite ways of predicting, one of the favorite theories I have, is who can elevate their game. Who has been playing in the regular season saying, you know what, this regular season is pretty boring. I can't wait to elevate my game in the playoffs. Versus a team that says, you know what, we've got to really achieve here in the regular season. So I see the New York Rangers as a team that's given it their all already, that can't elevate. I don't see Brandon Dubinsky being a better player. I don't see Callahan being a better player than he is now. But I see the Boston Bruins being bored for large sections of this season and will elevate their game. I see the best players in the Pittsburgh Penguins having the ability to elevate their game. So I usually revolve a lot of my predictions around what stars can be better than they were, who can take the game by the horns with the extra minutes they get and make a difference. And my other theory has to go around defensemen. When you have a big horse on D and your minutes go up from 23 to 31 because you need that game so badly, that changes a lot too. So if Chara goes 23 and turns it into 31, that changes a lot. If Seabrook and Keith go 23, but in the playoffs they turn that to 31 and they leave the two sucky defensemen on the bench, that changes a lot. So that's why I like Chicago too.
All right. We're just wrapping up here with Brian Wild from CTV Sports.
I have a question for the Wild Man.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Go,
Anakin
go.
Slade has a question
go,
for
Anakin,
you, my
go
friend.
Go, rhyme it. Boy, that, you know, I'm so sorry I said that. I feel terrible for saying that. Oh, you know what? That was the dumbest thing I've ever said. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Wow,
that must get so tiring. Hey, it's Anakin Slade. Oh, did you want a razor? Well, I'm not giving you a razor.
You know,
unless you can rhyme razor with something, and then I might give it to you. The brand name's the Fusion. Go.
You know, I see Roger Brulotte every once in a while, obviously, at baseball-related events.
No rhymes yet, Anakin. No, that's tough.
Every time he sees me, he's like, hey, the singer.
Yeah.
Hey, the rapper. I'm like, you ever going to learn my name, Roger?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, the rapper. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
Doesn't roll off my tongue. Yeah.
Anakin, hey, say, what does he say? Hey, say Patsy.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, Wild Man.
Yes.
You were talking about Vancouver and seeing them getting trounced in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think the shakeup's going to be if that goes down?
I think the shakeup might be so significant that Alain Vigneault is the next coach.
Dude, that's where I was hoping you were going. Seriously.
The next coach, the Montreal Canadiens.
That is my personal wish. I've tweeted that quite a bit. So I'm rooting for. Who are they playing in the first round, Van?
Who is Van playing in the first round? Van is the number one seed, and they're playing the 8 seed, the Los Angeles Kings.
All right.
Again.
And Los Angeles, look out, man. Quick might have been the best goalie in the league this year, if not Lundqvist.
They've got a horse
on D and Doughty. They struggle for goals a little bit for sure, but they played them well in the regular season. They got a good chance. And remember, Vancouver was only one goal shy of not going to the final last year on the Chris Campoli giveaway in the 7th game in OT. So
that's right. So you think Vancouver goes down, the first thing they'll do is...
Exactly. They'll shake it up. Oh, and don't forget one of the Citizens. I'm not sure which one.
One of them.
A concussion.
Yeah,
I forget.
That is correct.
I forget. Everybody does, right? Yeah, one of the Sedins got a concussion, yeah. Which one? I don't know.
Nobody ever knows which one.
Yeah, exactly, one of them. You know.
It's kind of like me and my brother.
Yeah.
Brian, we want to thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Pleasure. Sorry I said vagina.
That's okay. I was going to ask you to end it with a little dirty limerick or anecdote of some kind, and you accommodated me. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Brian, for bringing, you know, women to the forefront, even if it wasn't the forefront that I was expecting.
The real forefront.
You're welcome, Metric. This is Imperial Brian signing off.
Thanks, Brian.
Bye.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Jimmy, you got an update coming up? Ooh. Little Red Hot. You're listening to The Coffin Show. Julie Bayer, Anakin Slade. I am Jay Farrar. We'll be back.
Ladies and gentlemen,
are you ready for
the heart stopping,
fun loving,
hard rocking,
booty shaking,
love making,
Super Bowl quaking,
history making,
legendary E Street Band?
We'll be right back.
That was Bruce Springsteen. Is that it?
That, yeah,
I mean,
that's
I'm,
who it is.
You know, I'm too young and too hip to know to know about this music. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show with Jay Farrar, Anakin Slade, myself, Julie V, guest hosting, and we're going to talk to someone very important right now.
Oh,
he's a very important person on the Kaufman Show. It's Dave Kaufman himself, live from New York City. Dave, how is it going?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're good. Tell us how the show was.
You're just good. You're not having fun. You're not you know, taking advantage. The cat's away. The mice aren't playing. Come on.
Well, you know, you should really ask Brian Wilde that question. we'll fill you in, or you'll listen to the show after. He definitely would heed your advice there. We had some fun with Brian on the previous segment. So how was the Springsteen show?
Amazing. Three full hours and just a wonderful, wonderful concert. I'm surprised I still have a voice, to be honest with you guys.
That's good.
You sound sweet there, Dave. I kind of miss your voice, although it's a hell of a lot better looking at Julie than your mug all day. So,
well, I don't know. I think I hold my own, to be honest.
Yeah, you are a good looking man. You are a good looking man,
right.
I have to say. How was the crowd? The ambiance was great, I'm sure, in New York City.
Oh, yeah. MSG for Springsteen. I don't think it gets much better than that. Every fan knows every word to every song. We had total nosebleeds. We were behind the stage, third to last row in the building, and it was like we were front row center. It's nothing beats the Springsteen show, and there was a great tribute paid to the big man, to Clarence Clemons, tonight. It was the tour has just started, and Clarence Clemons was the backbone of the E Street Band, the saxophonist. His nephew Jake has taken his place in the band, and a couple of times during the show they stopped and just paid tribute to the big man, and just a wonderful night, very emotional, and fantastic stuff, guys.
You sound like you're in a lot better shape than I thought you would be. So that's
I'm you know, a 3 hour show, it feels more like you hit the gym than you hit the bar.
Right. That's true. Especially for Springsteen. I mean, he's no spring chicken, but he could still bring it.
No, he's in his 60s, and you know what, the two longest shows I've ever seen are Bruce Springsteen and Paul McCartney. And people my age should take note, because you know, I'm with my buddy Sarah right now, and the show started at 8:30, and at 10 o'clock, I looked at her and said, you know, if he was our age, he'd be just leaving the stage right now. I feel like it's very typical to see bands that are in their 20s or 30s play a 90-minute set, and it's just a shame, because there's something magic about just going and going and going and you know, throwing the crowd curveball after curveball.
I do 45.
Yeah.
I never go past 45.
Anakin Slade in the house.
Well, you know, hip-hop is a bit of a different animal, Anakin. the Jay-Z Kanye concert that I was at a few months ago, that went over 2.5 hours, but that last song that they played, whose name I cannot say on the radio, they played 8 times to finish off the concert.
Wow. Speaking of which...
What about the guys in Paris?
Right. Those people in Paris?
Those people in Paris.
Yeah, speaking of hip-hop, I think Brian Wilde just challenged me to a freestyle battle on air.
I will drive home right now to see that. wow, really?
Yeah, we're going to set it up.
Did he really go there? That's amazing. You want to do it on the 3rd at the Carter Benefit?
Yeah, it looks like we're going to have to call Don King. We're going to set this up. Wild Man versus Stalwart, and we're going to do it up.
Oh, no.
May 3rd.
Oh,
let's go.
No. Wow, this is like 8 kilometer.
Were you there when they did the tribute to the kid at Shea, the new Shea?
No, I was driving. I was en route. I plan on going to New Shea on Wednesday afternoon and seeing Mr. Strasburg pitch.
Did they have anything up there? Did they hang some sort of banner in honor of Gary?
Yeah, they put the Kid 8 patch that they're wearing on their jerseys, they put on the outfield wall. And the entire family was there to throw out the ceremonial first pitch.
Are they going to be wearing...
I'll tell you what, Anakin, this city is hurting just as much as Montreal from it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I've been wearing my Expos gear all around town. I bought a Mets hat today because I wanted to fit in at the Springsteen show.
Whoa,
but,
Dave.
But it's amazing the reaction I've got. People just stopping me on the street. Hey, Expo, the kid. And I mean, obviously, you know, heartwarming. I find that.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you felt that the energy was, you could feel that sort of energy in Manhattan, like we kind of did here. I mean, obviously it's not as, as fresh anymore, but, you know, considering
no,
what was happening.
You combine it, Anakin, with the fact that the Mets are 3-0 and the Yanks are 0-3. And, you know, I'll be honest, I don't know what happened tonight, but it's looking good right now in the city of New York.
What happened tonight was that there was a brawl at the Blue Jays game. And the
You're
home opener.
Kidding me.
There was a fight.
They honored Gary Carter at the Blue Jays game tonight.
Well, yeah, that ended up well. Everybody started fighting
with
for some. I'm sure he would be very proud of that. Speaking of Gary Carter, we got our Hurley's thing coming up here.
We do, and tickets go on sale tomorrow.
Yes, and you can get them at Hurley's Irish Pub. They will be available there. They are only.
I would suggest going down after dinner.
Yeah, absolutely. They're only $30 each. This is for a good cause. It goes to the Montreal Children's Hospital. There are going to be numerous bands involved here, including yours truly. Anakin Slade is here. Maurice James from the Blushing Brides, the Jimmy Rickers, Kristen Bassandri. This is going to be a lot of good stuff going on. This is a Gary Carter tribute that Dave Kaufman is organizing.
Yeah, and hopefully it's going to be an unparalleled success. I'm working on some really good stuff for the silent auction right now. I don't want to, you know, tip my hat too much, but some really, really cool stuff for the silent auction that you wouldn't be able to get every day.
Great. Last week you attended, speaking of baseball, again, Montreal baseball. Oh. You did attend Warren Cromartie's press conference. Any thoughts on
that?
Yes,
I did.
Any thoughts, my friend?
Well, yeah, I think the thoughts are my fingers are crossed, and I'm saying my prayers every night, and I'm hoping that the Montreal Baseball Project figures out a way to bring baseball back to Montreal. Right now, I think they've got a wonderful event plan. They're going to also raise a lot more money than we ever will at the benefit, but they're going to raise a lot of money for Gary Carter and for the Cedars Cancer Institute. And it's going to be how nice is it going to be to have the 81 Expos back in town?
Yeah, there's going to be a golf tournament, of course, a gala at the end, which again, one of my co-hosts here in studio, Anakin Slade, will be attending because he has a big part of that MBP project.
Yeah. Are you going to sing a song at the gala, Anakin?
We don't know what we're going to do right now. I'm definitely thinking about putting together something video montage-wise for the team.
Well, you got to have a montage. We love montages.
Yeah, montages are always reliable at these functions.
If anything, yeah, you can go back on that no matter what.
It's a surefire hit. Julie, I wanted to tell you that I was thinking of you today.
Oh, you were.
I picked you up a little something from the NBC store at Rockefeller Center. And I'll keep it a surprise for now, but needless to say, I think you'll very much approve. And as I was walking out of the store and turned the corner, I literally ran into Tina Fey.
I saw your picture. I was so jealous. She was
and wasn't very accessible because they were filming a scene, but definitely, she looked beautiful, first of all.
Is that not like the quintessential New York experience to run into Tina Fey?
Sarah and I were discussing that earlier, and my answer was Woody Allen.
Okay.
But
well,
I think for at least for our generation,
that's what I was
going to
say.
Yeah.
Like, because you were at a Bruce Springsteen show also, so it makes sense that you would say Woody Allen. But for me, I think Tina Fey would have been way cooler. I just want to like go give her a hug.
Think it's way cooler. I'm just I just still think that Woody Allen's kind of that quintessential New York guy. I mean, and I don't think I'd ever run into him. I don't think we run in the same circles. I don't date women 30 years my junior, so I don't think we hang out at the same places.
Well, you know, since you're what, 32 years old, that'd be a little bit awkward, Dave.
31.
Forgive me.
It's been a great time, though. I feel like I haven't stopped since I got here. Sort of a New York version of a vacation, which is not really a vacation at all. I ended up at the MLB Fan Cave today.
What is
and,
that?
And hung out with all... That is really what I should be doing with myself. A whole bunch of baseball fans sitting in a room
watching all 4,000 ball games this year.
Okay.
And it's sponsored by MLB. There were 50,000 people who entered, and 9 made it to New York City. And funnily enough, they live within spitting distance of 25 Thompson.
Oh, yeah. That's all yeah. I could say.
Right.
Yeah,
a little shout out there.
And I walked by it last night, Anakin, and obviously thought of you. And I'm staying at a hotel. Got the most incredible deal. I didn't know that good hotels went this cheap in New York until I opened the window of my hotel room and saw that I'm staring right onto, looking right over Ground Zero.
Yeah, and you know, I think one of the reasons that it's a little cheaper as well. Did you get? Was there still construction going on, and was it loud?
I got back to the room at about 4:30 yesterday morning, and the construction had already started.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it didn't stop. It went all day long.
Show me
a spot in this city where you aren't going to be interrupted by noise. I'd like to see it.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's the odds are not good. But did you get a chance to go down to the memorial and check it out?
I went about 5 years ago, before the Freedom Tower was up, before the reflecting pools were there. Now, if you want to go to the 9/11 Memorial, you have to get your tickets well in advance.
Yeah, it's a long process.
They have some sort of you know what? I saw it, and I every time I look out my window right now, I'm seeing it, and it's amazing how first of all, the size of it is just. I want to use the word awesome, and I know that doesn't sound like the right word, but I think it actually fits. Like it's a huge site.
Awe-inspiring.
You can't awe-inspire. Well, yeah, except I don't feel awed from it. I don't want to go and commit an atrocity. I just, it's the scope of it is something that you cannot picture from looking at it on television. And knowing that you were there and knowing, you know, I covered that ground last night from Ground Zero to 25 Thompson. So I basically took your walk from the video. And, yeah, man, I was thinking about it.
It was pretty
intense.
When we shot the video last summer, we did the exact walk, you know, from 25 Thompson all the way to Ground Zero. And, you know, I hadn't been in Soho hardly since 2001. And just to see some of those streets again was pretty weird, especially when I was rapping down those streets at the same time because they were shooting me as I was walking. Yeah.
I guess. But, you know, it's such an artistic community that I'm sure nobody would even look twice at you.
It was also 5 in the morning.
There's somebody rapping down the street all the time in New York, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Whether there's a camera on them or not.
Exactly.
By the way, something else you missed tonight. Yu Darvish made his Major League debut. I don't know if you managed to see any updates on it.
No, I haven't seen. I was at the fan cave this afternoon. I saw it. Actually, I'll tell you. I walked into the fan cave. The Twins were playing. And as I walked in, my favorite 2004 Expo, Jamie Carroll, came up to bat and flashed across 12 screens.
Amazing.
And I thought that was pretty cool.
Wow.
But I haven't seen anything. I know. And it shows the stat line that he's 0 for 11. And there was this girl who's, I think, the Twins representative in a cave. Her name was Lindsay. And she was like, oh, geez, Jamie Carroll's up. And I was like, don't you worry. I'm a good luck son. He's getting on base. And then it flashes 0 for 11 on the season. And I'm like, oh, shit, I'm in trouble. Needless to say, Jamie Carroll draws a walk. So I don't know what happened after that, and I'm imagining that the Twins didn't do much after that. But, I'm still Jamie Carroll's lucky rabbit foot.
Well, Darvish pulled off a win, and he had a really rough start, and his countryman, Ichiro, went 3-for-4 off of him. So I thought you might be interested to know that, but I think he had a four-run first inning.
As a big fan of the Sino baseball arts, I really appreciate that.
Great. Thanks for putting that in. Yeah, so aside from that, not much going on in the baseball today. When are you coming back? When are you heading back?
I'm coming back probably Thursday.
Really? That
late? Like still... Yeah, man, I'm in New York City. I'm just having fun. I haven't had this much fun. I literally have done whatever I wanted for 36 hours now, and I haven't had enough. I'm exhausted, but this has been one of the best trips I've had so far. When I drove in, I parked my car, showered at the hotel, and left right away, and walked up to Chelsea to a theater called UCB, the Upright Citizens Brigade.
Okay.
Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't actually.
It's Amy Poehler's improv comedy troupe.
Okay. And, okay. Yes, I have heard of that.
I believe they played just for last summer. And
okay.
Don't miss it, people. If they come back to Montreal, you're going to want to see this. And if you get to New York, they do a free show on Sunday night. You have to line up pretty early, but it was well worth it. 2 hours of incredible entertainment. A whole bunch of great comedians. Chris Gethard, who was at the Just for Last Festival this summer. The guy who plays Gabe in The Office was on stage for it, and he was fantastic.
Great.
I would camp out for days to see Amy Poehler.
Pardon?
I would camp out for days to see that.
Yeah, I was really hoping, Julie, I'll tell you, I was really hoping that she would be there. I guess you can have Faye or Poehler, but not both. It's a rule. It's a New York rule. If I had seen Amy Poehler on Sunday, there's no way I would have almost run over Tina Fey in front of Rock Center today.
My goodness. I almost ran over Al Pacino once, but that was a long time ago.
Can I tell you what, when I sent out the tweet, the best with the picture with Tina Fey, the best reaction I got was from Montreal Design, Bobby. He wrote, "You just can't escape those Greeks, can you?"
That's funny. You really can. You're constantly surrounded.
You guys love me. That's the only thing I can. It has to be that.
Well, you've been very kind to our people, and we appreciate that, Dave. What do we got lined up for next week? We got surprises, or what are you thinking?
Yes, surprises. Surprise. I don't have anything planned for next week.
We've got, That's why I was
like. Definitely going to be, I know that Travis Reichsma will be back because he was fantastic a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, he was.
And he's going to start giving us a tutorial on sabermetrics. Because I feel like it's something that has kind of passed us by as Expos fans, because it wasn't really de rigueur when we were watching baseball. So I think that it's time for us to go to school, and Travis is definitely going to help us with that. And I promised Ben Christensen, Shaq Brody on Twitter, in the MLB Fan Cave, that he would be a baseball correspondent from the cave for us all summer. So we'll probably start that next week, too. He, of course, you remember from our show, the one with the crazy hair and the tattoos of every Major League logo on his body, of every Major League mascot on his body.
Yes, and some of them some of them more interesting than others, as we pointed out.
Some of them are absolutely, well, look, he's got a Doc Ellis-inspired, dilated pupil parrot for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I think pretty much as soon as I heard that, I fell in love with the man. I thought it was just so cool. He's got Bonnie Brewer. Not Bernie Brewer, but Bonnie Brewer. You want to know why he's got Bonnie Brewer? Because all of the Brewers' management in the 60s, ownership, approved Bonnie Brewer, except for Mr. Alan H. Bud Selig. He wanted Bernie Brewer. So Ben thought, let's put Bonnie Brewer on my body.
What a shock. Selig going against the grain. Or anything that makes any kind of sense.
A contrarian's contrarian.
To the very end. Dave Kaufman, this is your show. We miss you greatly.
Oh, no, you don't. Have fun, guys.
Yeah, we will. Thanks a lot for joining us here and helping us out, because it's just not the same without you. It's not the same without you.
No, come on. Well, that's okay. Yeah, you get to hear less Tragically Hip, and probably no Tragically Hip and less Springsteen, I'd imagine.
Yeah, we've been we have had a little bit of a different vibe, a little Pink Floyd tonight, a little bit,
nice.
Yeah, a little bit of Anakin Slade, and amongst others, a nice. But it's been nice and docile, nice and relaxed. Dave, thank you so much.
I saw the lineup too. I saw that you guys have incredible guests tonight.
Yeah, we did.
Whoever books your guests, we need to hire them to be a part of the show.
Her name is Julie V. She came in with a lot of surprises today, so we've had a lot of guests and a lot of fun without you, but. Have a good time, bud. Relax a little bit out there.
I will. I am. I promise. I feel great. And get that podcast up. I can't wait to hear it on the way home.
Thanks a lot. Dave Kaufman.
Good night, guys.
Peace, bud.
Good night, buddy. Dave Kaufman is the host of this show. And he'll be back next week. Julie V. Anakin Slade, Jay Farrar. We're going to take a little break right now. And we'll be back. Do we have a guest coming up, Julie?
We're going to be talking some MMA with Maggie Hendricks.
Fantastic. That's coming up next on The Kaufman Show on TSN 990.
We have that all. And it's so pandemonium. We've never seen anything like it.
Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. A little Anakin Slade for you. Anakin, who's in studio with us tonight, who has been in studio with us.
Yes, I must be leaving you now, but I want to thank you guys for having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for coming on. A little star power with us here on the Team 990, TSN 990.
Well, you guys got Brian Wilde and...
And Anakin Slade. That's it, buddy. That's... No.
And Dave Kaufman, who is a guest on his own show.
He was a guest on his own show. What do you got coming up there, bro?
Well, this is from the album... This is Thompson 25, the song that Kaufman was referring to about in 9/11 and all that. So this is on the new album, Once More We Survive, which is on iTunes. AnakinSlade.com. You can see all the videos. And, of course, my song for the kid, Gary Carter, is still on iTunes, and we're still raising money for the Gary Carter Foundation. So,
and you will be there Thursday, May 3rd at Hurley's Irish Pub for the Gary Carter tribute.
I will be there, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to sit down, do a couple of songs, and yeah, it's all for a great cause once again.
Thanks for coming in, bro. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Helping us out here.
Good luck for the rest of the night.
Overheard someone whisper, "We are now exempt." It was Leonard. He claimed he could see no hell till he felt the flames from his Chelsea hotel. Right then, Mr. Worth emerged from a dark cloud, brandishing a brand.
All right, we're gonna switch it up a little bit here. For those of you who know me already, I am a huge mixed martial arts fan, and I talk a lot about it. I used to talk about it on the radio also. And I got one of my favorite MMA media people to come on to the show tonight and talk to us about some MMA, Maggie Hendricks. She is the writer for the Yahoo Sports Cage Writer blog. And you can follow her on Twitter at Maggie Hendricks. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Just peachy.
Great. You sound so peachy and upbeat and in a great mood. I know that you wanted to talk about poutine. Have you ever had real, actual poutine?
No, and I'm fascinated by it because it pretty much puts together everything I love in the world in one place. So I need to try it at some point. I need to get up to Montreal and try it as soon as possible.
Here's the thing. There's a lot of poutine imposters, and if ask anyone from Montreal, I think that this is a universal truth for everyone, well, in the province of Quebec, really. It's really offensive to have poutine that is not made with cheese curds.
I can believe that because that's what it's supposed to be. And there are people in this world who didn't even know that cheese curds existed. When the UFC was in Milwaukee, I kept telling all of the UFC staffers and everything to make sure that they had some real good cheese curds. Well, and they didn't even... They said, "What are cheese curds? I don't even know what those are."
In Milwaukee?
Yeah.
They're crazy.
I know.
All right. Let's ease into this right now with something that our listeners are probably all familiar with. George St. Pierre, GSP. What is the latest news on him? Because he's been out for a while now, and he's had surgery, and he's been tweeting and updating his Facebook with news from his rehabilitation. What is the timeline that we're expecting now? I believe sometime in the fall?
Yes, he's really pushing to be able to fight on the Montreal card that is coming in November. That is Montreal, right? Yes. That is coming along in November. It's November 17th, UFC 154, and he really obviously wants to fight on that card because obviously that's his hometown and he's also had great success. And the UFC will want it, too, because the environment that happens in Montreal when GSP comes to the cage is pretty spectacular and always produces some really memorable images and moments. So hopefully his he will continue to progress. I mean, an ACL tear is no joke, and you have to make sure you're doing it the right way, and he's coming back the right way. And he is. He's, you know, has all the top technology and going to all the best physical therapists and doctors in the country, or really in the entire North America. So hopefully that will mean that he will be able to fight by mid-November.
And what we do know about GSP is he's so meticulous and calculated, and I don't think he would come back before being 100% ready. I don't think that that's something that GSP would do. And speaking of memorable moments, for those of you, I think a lot of our Montreal listeners will remember this. His last fight at the Bell Centre was against Josh Koscheck. That was the fight, right? No. Did he? Yes, I think it was the Josh Koscheck fight, the last one in Montreal. Yes, because he fought, his next one was in Toronto.
Right.
And it was right after, or like during the NHL playoffs, and Josh Koscheck is from Pittsburgh. And right before, Josh Koscheck fought in Montreal a while before that, and he said he was going to beat GSP worse than the Pittsburgh Penguins were going to beat the Montreal Canadiens. And that really just livened the whole rivalry there. And it was a pretty special ambiance at the Bell Center. And I actually was able to go to that show last minute, completely last minute, with the host of the show, Dave Kaufman. We went to that show. We were at McLean's Pub, Jay. And someone from, you know how sometimes Dana White or will tweet, okay, fans, I'll be at whatever address or whatever street corner. First four fans to show up get free tickets or something like that. And this UFC person just walks right into the bar and starts just handing out tickets. And so Dave Kaufman goes, I'm not aware of this at this point.
They were floor tickets too, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. And Dave, I don't even know what's going on. Dave goes up to him and says, hey, do you have some tickets for me if you're giving them out? And the guy says, yeah, sure, here too. And so Dave comes up to me and he shows me the tickets. And it's like 9:45. It's right before the pay-per-view. And he says, do you want to go to the Bell Center? Do you want to go to see the fights? And I'm like, I don't even care how he got the tickets. I thought that he swiped them from someone. Like, that's what, in my mind, I was like, oh my God, did he steal these? We need to get out of here before the person he stole them from realizes it. Because I so wanted to go. And I just left all of my friends there. We ran to the Bell Center.
Didn't pay her bill either, by the way.
Yeah, I came back after and I did pay my bill. But, but I mean, we just ran to the Bell Center and it was on our way there. I was like, how did you get these tickets anyway? I did not even care how he got them. I just wanted to be there. And there was so much adrenaline, and it was the loudest crowd that I had ever heard was at the Bell Center when GSP was fighting. And I understand UFC for wanting them, you know, and really probably pushing for GSP to make sure that he's ready, I guess, for November 17th. Because who else are they going to put in Montreal that's going to generate so much buzz? I mean, it's really, it has to be GSP, right?
It does, but at the same time, what's wonderful about pretty much every Canadian show is that Canadian fans bring it, show up every single fight, are there early, yell the entire time. There's always such energy and fun in every Canadian show. So it would be fantastic for it to be GSP, because especially since he's coming back from an injury like this, a very serious injury, and he hasn't had to do that before, I think it would be a great boost for him. But quite honestly, the fans in Canada generally do such a good job of filling an arena that even if it's not him, it'll still be an amazing show.
That's a good point. I believe that the biggest show was in, is it still the Toronto show that was the biggest one they've ever had?
As of right now, looking forward at UFC 147, which is going to be in Brazil.
The Brazil one, yeah.
Yeah, they're expecting to be able to seat around 60,000 to 65,000 at that one. So that will knock out the Bell Center, but that will knock out the Rogers Center in Toronto, but it'll it's still way more than any other crowd in North America. That's for darn sure.
All right, Maggie, for our listeners who maybe aren't MMA fans and don't really know much about the sport beyond, you know, maybe what they know about GSP, and a lot of people think that GSP might be a little bit boring. He's a very safe, quote unquote, you know, fighter, and that doesn't appeal to a lot of people. If you had to tell our listeners there's an event coming up, or there's a fight card or a specific fight coming up that they should definitely not miss if they want to get a taste of some really great MMA, so a really great fight. What would you suggest?
Definitely UFC 145, the show coming up on April 21st. The headline of that event is John Jones, the UFC light heavyweight champ, against Rashad Evans, who was once the UFC light heavyweight champ.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't get that much into the breaking down why this would be a great fight, looking at the way their styles are or anything like this, has a great backstory. Rashad Evans and John Jones were once training partners. They were good friends. Rashad considered himself John's mentor, and then their friendship disintegrated as word got out on them fighting each other and John saying, yes, I would fight Rashad. And there's a lot of bad blood there, and it's a pretty interesting thing to watch. And the UFC is helping you watch and learn more about these guys by producing these primetime specials, these half-hour like mini-series about what's going on in these two gentlemen's camps as they're moving up into this card. So there'll be two more airings of the primetimes. I'm not sure where they air in Canada. I would have to look that up, but I do know they air online and everything, and I highly doubt the UFC wouldn't make them available in Canada because the UFC loves Canada. So it's a great main event. And then even the undercard fights moving up into it, there's some great stuff. There's some great fights, and there's a few Canadian fighters that you could cheer for, like Michael McDonald and Mark Hominick.
Absolutely.
Mark Bocek.
Absolutely, that's great. And just quickly, I'd like to talk just briefly about women's MMA. Is a sport that the UFC does not. There are no female fighters, or as I like to call them, fighters,
right,
in the UFC at the moment. And one of the most recognizable figures in the sport, Chris Cyborg Santos, was recently. She recently tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. That's correct?
Yes, and that suspension was actually upheld today by the California State Athletic Commission.
There you go.
She's going to be out for 12 months.
Wow, that how big of a hit, how brutal of a hit is that to women? And I hate calling it that. I keep quoting this, but I guess we still need to. How big of a hit is it to women's MMA?
You know what? If you would have asked me this about 3 or 4 months ago, mm-hmm, I would have been very devastated about what it meant to female fights moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
But what Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey have been able to do in the past few months.
Great point, yeah.
They have really been able to show that there are plenty of other women who are able to take that mantle from Chris and run it forward. And even outside of the Zuffa family, outside of Strikeforce, there's another fight between two women in Bellator that is going to be fantastic between Jessica Aguilar and Megumi Fujii. I never say that correctly the first time. that's a 115-pound fight. So those are fairly small women, but who I would not mess with ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so... There are what's great right now is even without Chris and without Gina Carano, even who has moved on, it seems like she's done with her MMA career. She hasn't said she is, but she's making a lot of money in movies, so mm-hmm, I don't really see her coming back to fight. Plenty of other women have emerged to say, hey, look, we can fight, and what that's actually done is made it more competitive because Chris. I mean, you don't know how much of it was the performance-enhancing drugs, but Chris Cyborg was head and shoulders above every other woman that she fought. So now what these women like Rousey and Tate and Marlis Conan and plenty of other women are doing is showing, no, not only can we fight, but we can be competitive and there can be plenty of other women who can challenge us at the highest levels.
You raise an excellent point. There are a few Cyborg fights that were actually uncomfortable to watch. She is so dominant and so strong, sometimes you felt like they were sending, you know, a little lamb to the slaughterhouse. And frankly, it made me uncomfortable because it was so uneven. And now that there's more competition, and also what you mentioned about Tate and Rousey is they've just been creating a really big buzz around the sport and around their own fights, because they've just been trash talking it up and creating this whole big rivalry. And I think it's great that they've created their own spot. They've put it into the minds of fans that they have a need. Like, they created a need for the fans to see them fight, which is what they needed to do.
And it wasn't ever, I just want to watch these two beautiful women paw at each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are men out there who thought that. I'm sure there are women out there who thought that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to be true in any sort of competition where there are two people who work out a lot and have very attractive bodies coming close to each other. That's just the fact of life. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the conversations that were going up into that fight
mm-hmm.
were how good of a fight that was going to be. And then it turned out to be a fantastic fight. It only lasted one round, but it was still a great fight.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the exciting thing about this. That is that people weren't talking about how gorgeous they were. People were talking about it's a great fight. And that is much more sustainable for female MMA moving forward.
That's a great point. And one last question. What's Sarah Kaufman up to these days?
She is actually going to get she has the next title shot. So she's going to get the next fight against Ronda Rousey, who is the new bantamweight champ for Strikeforce. The only question is when. Strikeforce right now only has one event scheduled, and they have a lot of fighters they need to service. So they will fight at some point, but it's just when.
Sarah Kaufman is a wonderful MMA mixed martial artist from Canada, from Vancouver, BC.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. Jay, are you an MMA fan?
I am an MMA fan. In fact, I take part in MMA at a local school here in Montreal.
You do?
I do, and I enjoy it very much. My body doesn't enjoy it very much. I actually don't compete because, I just don't feel like having my ass handed to me. Do you think, Maggie, that we'll ever see, maybe these guys waive their weight class and we'll see an Anderson Silva GSP fight one day?
You know, I hope for it, but I really think the much more likely fight of one of these great fighters who has been dominant for so long, it'll be more likely to see Anderson Silva, John Jones, because Anderson Silva is enormous. He usually walks around about 220, whereas GSP walks around about 185. So the size difference between the two, it would take a whole lot for GSP to bulk up so much to make it a competitive fight. So I would theoretically love to see it, but I don't know if it's going to happen because there is such a size difference between the two.
Especially with GSP coming back from his injury. And, I mean, he's not getting any younger. And we have seen a lot of athletes, you know, go on for years. But, I mean, I think it's safe to say that if his, like, golden era or whatever, the GSP era, isn't over, it's got to be winding down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the kind of fighter that when his skills start to go, he'll be done. I think I see him more almost like how Barry Sanders was as a running back, that Barry Sanders didn't want to hold on, or Jim Brown didn't want to hold on forever. And as soon as they were done and they weren't playing their sport in the level they were, they moved on. And I don't see him being the kind of fighter that just has to hold on for one more fight to make sure that he's really done.
Right. He's not going to be one of those, like, veteran gatekeepers who you just keep watching fight and go, oh, my goodness, just stop already because it's just painful.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks so much, Maggie, for coming on with us and talking some MMA. It had been so long since I talked about the sport, and it feels really good to do that. Maggie, who we can follow on Twitter, at Maggie Hendricks, and she writes at Yahoo Sports for the Cage Writer blog. Maggie, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun, and my love to everyone in Montreal.
Thank you, and please do make sure that you come up and try some of our delicious poutine.
Oh, I will.
All right, thanks, Maggie.
You can guarantee that.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to The Kaufman Show, and it's Jay Farrar, Jimmy on the board, and myself, Julie V.
That was the first time we've talked MMA on the Kaufman Show.
All right.
Thank you, Julie, for bringing that.
It's my pleasure. We'll be back right after this. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have a track listing on the other CD we brought in, so it was easier to play his songs. I'm sure he's very happy about that, and Dave Kaufman is not. We got another guest here, Julie.
We do. We're going to be talking with Adam Jacoby. He is the Bleacher Report College Football Lead Big Ten writer. Hi, Adam. How's it going?
It's going great, Julie. How are you?
I'm good. Having a lot of fun here tonight. We just spoke with Maggie Hendricks, so we just talked about some MMA.
Yeah, it's good. I like Maggie. I like Maggie a lot.
I enjoy Maggie, too. Now, Adam, I wanted to ask you and Jay, I understand that there is something of a scandal going on in football right now about something about bounties and people being encouraged to attack and injure their opponents. Now, what is the deal with this?
Well, Roger Goodell just announced today, I believe it was today, yesterday or today, I think it was today, that he was upholding the suspension of several coaches, including the head coach, Sean Payton, for a year for the continuing bounty program that the New Orleans Saints were running under defensive coordinator Greg Williams, and that's Greg with three G's. Greg, anyway, and it was exactly what it sounds like, and it is as bad as it sounded. It was Williams putting bounties of what would be a lot of money to you or me, but isn't a whole lot of money to football players, usually about $10,000 or so, to injure opposing players. And surprisingly, that's illegal. That's really illegal in the NFL. And what made it really bad was the NFL caught wind of this over a year ago. And they didn't make a big deal out of it then publicly, but they told the Saints organization from ownership, management, the coaching staff that it has to stop. It did not stop. The NFL found out that it didn't stop, and eventually there were some sound clips that came out of the coach specifically encouraging them in their playoff game to injure players. Once that came to light, the NFL really had no choice but to drop the hammer and drop it really, really hard.
Adam, it's no surprise, obviously, that Goodell upheld the decision since he was in charge of the appeal. But,
right.
I mean, it's pretty clear what was going to happen there. I mean, from the tapes, I mean, I played a decent level of football, 17 to 21-year-old major junior here in Montreal. And, I mean, this is the kind of rhetoric that goes on very often in the locker room. From the tapes itself, you can't really tell that there's a bounty. Apparently, he was making some sort of universal money gesture with his hand, rubbing his fingers together. At what level does this kind of jargon start in the locker room, and can it always be so incriminating?
It starts as soon as there's contact being made.
Like, right.
Obviously, nobody's talking about taking out ACLs in flag football, but I played high school football down here in the States, and there was never any encouragement to specifically injure guys or go for concussions or anything like that. Like that's not really a good way to stay employed when you're coaching 14-year-olds. But the more violent but vague rhetoric, like the take out the head, knock these guys into the dirt. And that's just what I can say on the air. But from the word go, it was violent, it was vulgar. But it's what we ate up, and it's what football players in general, these kids especially who are jacked up on adrenaline, they want to be encouraged to just knock the hell up out of the person right in front of them, because that's exactly what the person in front of them is going to try to do to them too. That's the nature of the sport. As they say, it's not a contact sport, it's a collision sport.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be fearless in those collisions. And There, you can't really be equivocal in your, you know, encouragements to these kids. You know, when it comes to, well, how much do I want you to go out there and hit them? Well, I want you to knock their head off. You know, it's the rhetoric of the game. It goes on everywhere in every single locker room. But you cross a line when you start to talk about, you know, testing whether a guy's concussions are still an issue, or saying we're going to take this guy's ACL out. We're going to, you know, here's how you hurt this guy's ankle. That's where the line is. And, you know, I don't harbor any illusions about whether other teams have done this. But, you know, the Saints were blatant about it. They were told, you know, that they had to stop, and they didn't. And, you know, if you don't respect the office of the commissioner, bad things are going to happen.
Well, see, that's what I was thinking, because I was thinking to myself, how happy is the NFL about this right now? Because, Jay, you mentioned earlier that Goodell, you know, upheld the decision, you know, to discipline this person. And how happy are they, though, to have this person to use as a scapegoat, you know, instead mm-hmm. of examining, you know, a system that created this problem? They can just throw the book at this coach and kind of just, you know, bury at least part of the issue and just say, you know, well, we disciplined this person, we dealt with this problem, and, you know, I just feel like it's going to be easy to turn, you know, turn away and kind of ignore it for a little bit, because we dealt with the problem, it was dealt with, the NFL reacted positively, and they threw the book at him, but it doesn't really help any of the issue. This is just like a Band-Aid.
Yeah, that's not an inaccurate way to describe it. Now, a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's not easy for the NFL to get proof of major wrongdoing like this. And you know, a lot of times these teams operate under, you know, plausible deniability, and they don't say, I don't know, actually have a pool of money that they talk about in front of other people. But, you know, yeah, this is a cultural problem that they're trying to fix in one fell swoop, and that's not the way cultural problems get fixed. But at the same time, you know, it depends on if you really want to call it a problem,
mm-hmm.
or maybe you just call it the culture.
Right.
It seems like the NFL, you know, wants to. I don't want to say have it both ways, but, you know, they want some, you know, hard hitting, you know, as hard as you can hit. But, you know, at some point there's some mythical moral boundary of whether or not you actually try to injure a guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's just as much a part of the NFL's history as anything else. That's been going on longer than the forward pass in the NFL. And so now... Mm-hmm. Now that they're getting caught, now that there's proof of it, you know, now they're trying to back off it and, you know, keep up appearances and all that. You know, a smart football fan knows a little better, and most honest football fans are saying, well, we know. we know that goes on, but we're still watching.
Okay.
And so that's where you have to really decide whether or not it's actually a problem or just something that you can ignore if you try hard enough.
Okay. Speaking of cultural problems, I know that you're a football, you're a college football guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in Arkansas right now with Coach Bobby Petrino. Is that the correct way to pronounce it?
That is it, yep.
Okay, so what happened with this coach is he got into a motorcycle accident, and it was only revealed after the police report came out that he was not alone on his motorcycle. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, and that's a problem because he had gone in front of the press before the police report had come out
mm-hmm.
and said, hey, I was by myself, and the Arkansas athletic department backed that up, and they said, you know, it was an isolated incident. It was a one-vehicle accident. Nobody else was involved, and we hope Mr. Petrino recovers. And he does have a lot of recovering to do. His face got pretty messed up. There were some broken ribs. And,
right.
And they're thinking that there might be like a cracked vertebra in his neck. So, I mean, like a legit motorcycle injury. The problem is, at some point, somebody was lying to somebody between Mr. Petrino, the Arkansas Athletic Department, and the general public, because according to the police, Mr. Petrino had a 25-year-old woman on the back of his motorcycle. She wasn't injured, but, you know, that's a different story than what everybody was told. And as it turns out, she was a former volleyball player at Arkansas, and somebody that he had just hired as a low-level assistant in the football program, not coaching, but, you know, an administrative aide. And she was also engaged to somebody else in the Arkansas Athletic Department. And also Mr. Petrino's married with four kids.
Right. So, you know, you mentioned how the athletic department backed up Petrino, what he said, when in fact there was something going on between mm-hmm. him and an employee of the athletic department. And it was, you know, an extramarital thing, if we want to call it like that.
Right. He later admitted that it was a former inappropriate relationship. Now, mm-hmm. I think it became former the moment that motorcycle crashed and
right.
He, you know, arranged a way for them to go away from it separately. But he had hired her literally less than a week before that crash.
Wow.
You know, and if she's on his mic right after that, I don't think that there's any doubt that, you know, it was an ongoing relationship at that mm-hmm. point. I mean, you can connect the dots. Mr. Petrino is very lucky in that in the state of Arkansas, you are allowed to hire somebody as a subordinate with whom you're having a romantic relationship.
Oh, is that right?
So,
okay.
So what he did was not technically illegal, but whenever the best thing you can say about somebody is what he did is not technically illegal, he's in a lot of hot water, and that's the situation that he finds himself in right now between the cover-up and, you know, hiring somebody who is, we might add, who was engaged, you know, to somebody else.
Someone else in the organization, right?
Yes, an administrator for the swim team.
And where this is somewhat of a cultural problem where I wanted to, you know, where I really wanted to go with this is this person, her name is Jessica Dorrell. Dorrell?
Yes, that's it, yes. And the reason people know that is her name appeared in the police report when it was published by one of the newspapers in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And when they published the police report, I mean, they published everything and redacted absolutely nothing.
Right.
And that includes not only Mr. Petrino's driver's license number, but also Ms. Durrell's home phone number.
Oh, wow.
And so her name and her phone number and her statement. And also when people found out about this and found out about her identity, you know, a quick Google search revealed her wedding page. And you know, it's one of those, like, open wedding things where everyone can leave their well wishes.
Right.
And they don't have to register or anything like that. But so what that really did is as soon as that got you know, onto the message boards and the college football fan areas, what they did was they unleashed a torrent of really, really nasty things to say to her about her slut shaming, I guess you could call it, you should call it. And, you know, a lot of the messages were, like, sort of college football references, like, you know, pretending to be somebody else in college football who would have a extramarital affair and being like, hey, good job, blah, blah, blah. But it was universally disrespectful to her. I mean, universally.
Yeah.
There were hundreds of messages, and not a one of them was like, hey, this really sucks for you right now. And
yeah, I read some of the comments. They're just very, very gendered and very degrading comments. And they're clearly not comments that you would make, or not the same kind of comments you'd make to a man, where, you know, to if you had access to what to anything that could, like a wedding page or something for Bobby Petrino. And
right.
what I've seen people comment about him also is more along the lines of, again, very degrading comments to her and very high five, good job on the nice little blonde that you had on your motorcycle, photoshopping pictures and everything like that. And you know, sometimes I wonder, is literally every time a woman involved in anything, anything at all relating to sports, is that what we can expect? Is that what's going to happen? Are they going to be like the target for all women? You know, the it's that whole mentality where a woman does something wrong, or not wrong, or just does something, and it applies to everyone. Oh, women are all like this, etc. Is this something that we can expect just literally every single time that a woman is involved in some sort of story in sports?
Well, I mean, this is a pretty unique situation. I mean, not extramarital affairs with men in high power aren't exactly unique, but, you know, this isn't a situation that comes up very often. So I hesitate to ascribe this to a whole lot of larger world things. That said, there aren't a whole lot of situations in which a woman is involved in sports, and the natural way of, you know, the casual fan reacting to her is one of general support. You know, maybe if she's ill, you know, maybe if she's in the hospital, then there's some measure of support. But you know, by and large, it's, well, what does she look like? Or, you know, is she single? Like, are there cleavage pictures of her? It's a very not, you know, like very disrespectful, very bad double standard.
We saw a lot of that. We saw a lot of that during the Tiger Woods affair last year. So,
oh goodness,
more than we should have. Believe me, that went on for a little while. And yeah, you're right. It was very degrading.
It was, and the issue is sort of similar in both those instances. It, you know, I don't want to take a whole lot of agency away from these women and their decisions that they made, you know, in these extramarital affairs, because, you know, they were all adults, and they were all making
right.
their own adult decisions and all that. I don't want to, you know, say that they were necessarily coerced or anything like that. And they were getting involved, and they knew they were getting involved with public figures. That said, this isn't the sort of thing that they agreed to. This isn't something that they signed up for, and this negative attention, this, you know, just universal stream of degrading comments, that's not something that they deserve just for, you know, engaging in, you know, consensual adult relations, you know, whether or not they be outside the bounds of marriage or whatever, that's fine. I have a feeling that if Mr. Petrino weren't married, that there really wouldn't be a whole lot of difference in the way that Ms. Jarrell is portrayed at all, if any noticeable difference. You know, she'd still be like, oh, look at the blonde. Oh, it's time to make some sex jokes at her. So, it's you have to look at the evidence on this one, and the evidence is just overwhelmingly, you know, toward a negative double standard being applied to women who frankly, I don't think it's out of line to say that they deserve better.
No, it's you're right, and I just every time I read, I mean, no matter what the situation, and you're right, this is a really unique event, that a unique incident, but again, it always finds a wave. You know, there's a little crack there, there's a little, the door's open just a little bit to allow this kind of, you know, this kind of behavior, and people will just rush right in and just, you know, blow it, you know, wide open. And it seems like it always ends up that way. It's very unfortunate, and you know, I hope they can just, you know, figure out their whole things privately, maybe without lying publicly about it. You know, there's a way to handle these things, but definitely unwarranted comments about Miss Jessica Jarrell, unfortunately. Thanks, Adam. We have to wrap it up here. Thanks so much for joining us. Where can we read your stuff?
My blog is the Big Ten blog at Bleacher Report, and the URL is pretty simple. It's just bleacherreport.com/Big Ten blog, all one word. Also, I'm on Twitter, at Adam_Jacoby, J-A-C-O-B-I. The underscore is important. There's another guy without the underscore.
I have tweeted to him several times. I've tweeted to him several times. Poor guy. He must be sick of hearing about me.
I think he's sick of hearing about me.
Thanks. Thanks for being on with us and teaching me a little bit more about football, which is a sport I really don't follow all that much, and I probably should.
All right. Have a good night.
Thanks, Adam. What are we listening to right now? What is this?
What is this? This is the great Neil Young, my dear.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. It's all right.
We'll be back after the great Neil Young on the Kaufman Show.
Nothing like having some docile music the whole night. And in doing the beginning of our last segment with a dose of Slayer. That was Slayer. So, yeah, we went out on Neil Young and we come in with Slayer. This is the Kaufman Show. I am Jay Farrar, and I have been joined tonight by Julie Vayer. Julie, did you have some fun tonight?
I did. I did not expect to laugh as much as I did, especially with one of our guests, Brian Wilde.
The wild man was just that tonight.
He was wild. I had some fun. It's too bad Anakin had to leave.
That's okay. I won't miss him. Well, I've known him for 35 years. I mean, that's enough, right?
You know what was cute earlier is he called you, or anyway, one of you guys called each other the other bro.
Yeah.
And I thought it was so sweet because it wasn't the, hey, bro. You guys are actually brothers.
Yes, we are.
It was so sweet.
That was a legitimate bro. We've got a caller, and he's one of our regulars here every week. I wonder what he's got to say. We asked our callers to chime in. He'll be our last caller tonight. John in Denver, what is happening, my friend?
Sir, how are you? Julie, I'm now a fan.
That's great. I'm a fan of you, John, in Denver.
Are you?
Yes, I am now.
That works for me.
What's happening? What's up?
I wanted to quickly chime in on that Bobby Petrino stuff.
Cool.
As an American, I feel confident I can talk about this subject.
Go ahead.
Basically, what you're reading on that, and I read all 107 pages of that lovely uploaded wedding blog, is a bunch of inside jokes from people who have nothing better to do than talk smack about other people's fan bases. Sure, they brought gender into it, but honestly, it's the south of the United States. What do you expect? The average IQ there is about 20.
Wow.
Okay, I understand that we're talking about a less progressive area of the continent, if we can say that way.
Oh, sure we can. That was the nice way of what, yeah.
I'm trying to be as fair as I can. However, and I do realize this. However, I still will never say, oh, you know what? It's just the south of the United States. It's just the south of the States. Who cares? Misogynist's going to misogynist. You know what I mean?
No, and I understand. I'm not telling you to ignore it. Just it's to put it into context a bit. These are people who live and breathe that one sport, American, not even American football, American college football, and not even the whole thing, just a single conference, the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
The Southeast Conference, and all they care about down there is football. That's it. So when something like this happens down there, it's pretty much open season.
Well, yeah, especially when a woman becomes a scapegoat, as so often she does, stemming from high school. You know, she becomes the slut, even though somebody else is more responsible than she is for inappropriate behavior.
And even if she were responsible, even if she were like 99%
right.
responsible.
Right.
Yeah. You know, she doesn't. We're
all the attention goes to her. Yep. And nobody else is held responsible for their actions.
Bobby Petrino is somebody I wouldn't let slide on a piece of ice. he's the kind of guy. Well, not he's the kind of guy. He coached for the Atlanta Falcons and left midweek during the season with just leaving a note on his desk that he had taken the Arkansas job. Mm-hmm. Or wait, no, that was Louisville. He's a sleaze. And quite frankly, whatever happens to him is probably too good.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, is there any way we could try to dump Joe Sacco on you guys up there?
No, we don't want him. Thank you very much.
We don't want him either. Come
well, we
on.
Don't. We don't have. We have a lot of problems of our own here, and everybody's trying to dump all their trash on us.
Yeah, apparently you're going to take.
Well, the Ottawa Senators already did it, and look how that worked out for us.
Apparently, you're going to take a real big piece of garbage from us. The rumored new GM may be Francois Jaguerre. You guys enjoy that up there?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Are you really worried about that up there? You really think it's going to be Jaguerre?
Honestly, John, we're not worried about anything up here anymore. We're just going to go with it and see what happens and make it up as we go along.
What has happened to Habs fans?
What do you mean?
Have you become as demoralized as us Avs fans down here?
As you Avs fans? What?
He's a Colorado Avalanche fan.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Okay. Yeah,
who has won a more recent Stanley Cup than we have, by the way.
Yeah, you know, the long and storied history of the Colorado Avalanche.
Wow.
All right, thanks, John in Denver. I am now a huge fan of yours.
We've got Steve in Redondo. How's it going, Steve?
Jay, how are things going up there?
It's working out, buddy. Say hello to my host here this evening, Julie V.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, Julie. I was very confused. Either some hottie has taken over for Dave. Where's Dave?
Well,
hottie just because it's a female voice?
No.
You mean a nice looking lady has taken over for Dave? Dave's on vacation in New York.
You
want to handle Steve for a little while, Julie?
What do you got for us, Steve?
What's on your mind, buddy?
I've got a question for you guys because I'm confused as always. I'm sure you can tell. There's a bunch of students that are constantly, I don't know, striking or something in Montreal because they're paying too little tuition. Is that the problem? What's going on there?
No, it's that I believe that the crux of it is that a $1,600 hike in tuition that does not alleviate any of the, you know, the burden that the current loans and bursaries, especially loans program, it doesn't alleviate any of the burden on the students. And it it makes education a little bit less accessible. And I know that every single time that the media talks that we read about the tuition hike, it's always accompanied by the famous flowchart of how much
sure.
every single province pays. But I think if you're going to do that, you should really also add a pie chart or a flowchart about indicating how much we pay here in Quebec in taxes. And how much these students and future workers are going to be paying, you know, for their education in the long run. And so I don't think that it's being treated fairly no matter. I think that's an objective and that's a fair thing to say, that it's really not being treated, fairly in most media that I've seen. It's not about, you know, yes, they do pay less, but we also pay much more taxes. And really, I mean, there's so many countries where education is free. And I think that that's important to a lot of people and a lot of students at the heart of this protest is that, you know, education is a right and they don't want to be made a business out of.
How much is tuition in Quebec?
I wouldn't know because I never went to school, but it is higher than the rest of Canada, but lower by U.S. standards. At the same time, it's also a question of where the money is going as well, and people are questioning that aspect of it. So, I mean, we're not used to paying too high tuitions here, and Quebec is special because we don't have to. So nobody likes to see it go up at all, especially when it seems to be going to the wrong hands.
And especially now, Lynn Beauchamp has said, you know, it's been treated as though she caved a little bit under pressure and is, you know, kind of trying to negotiate. But all she's really done is is make the loans program. She's you know, modified the loans program, which essentially is not a deal with the students or in favor of the students. It's really a deal with the banks, in favor of the banks. And, you know, if I were the students protesting, you know, I would be upset about this as well. This is just mocking the whole idea, in my opinion. And, you know, no matter where you stand on the issue, that's not a real offer.
I'm a proponent of civil unrest and chaos, so I enjoy every single second of it. Julie, see the hottie's got a brain. All right, Steve, thanks a lot for the call. God almighty. Just after we finished the last segment talking. Wasn't that perfect timing?
It was great. I mean, you hear a woman's voice and automatically she's not the knowledgeable sports fan. She's not the insightful
She's
broadcaster.
The hottie sitting in with me when you are actually anchoring the show today.
She's the hottie, which is, you know, it might seem like a harmless comment, a compliment, but really it's just, you know, it's the kind of thing that perpetuates the whole culture we were talking about in the previous segment.
I don't think Steve meant anything bad by it.
I'm sure he didn't mean any harm, but
it may have
been
just a ignorant slip of words.
Especially after the last segment.
Well, Julie, wonderful. I had a great time today.
So did I.
Yeah.
So did I.
We really must do this again sometime.
We should, and it would be great if you and most importantly Dave, because it is the Kaufman Show.
It is the Kaufman Show.
Wanted to have me back on, Dave. If you want to have me back on, I'm all yours.
Yeah. Thanks for getting us those guests. You want to give them a shout out again?
Absolutely. Thanks to Craig Brownstein, who is the author of the Puck Buddies blog. You know, LGBT bloggers and all that. Really cool. Brian Wild, CTV Sports. We had a blast with him. Thanks to Dave Kaufman for calling in from New York after the super, his show, the Bruce Springsteen show. Maggie Hendricks of Yahoo Sports, Cage Writer, talking some MMA, and Adam Jacoby of the Big Ten blog, Bleacher Report.
My thanks to you, Julie V, for joining me tonight. My thanks to Anakin Slade as well for helping us out. Jimmy G, thank you very much. As usual, great job. Thank you for telling us when we're supposed to go to commercials. Because, you know, what do we know, right? We're just here to yell at people.
I'm just the guest host, Hottie. So thanks to you, Jay. I was a little, this was new for me to host. And I hadn't been on the air in, I think, a year and a half.
Well, you did a great job.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, of course, to our listeners. Good night, everyone. We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw face down in our suit, some French restaurant. I saw Rivière du Loup last night at the tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I